is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, December 11, 2019. I'm Buster Olney. Our producer, Troy Farkas, is back in Bristol. And Troy, I'm not a deep sleeper, as you know. And I woke up last night at midnight. I'm back here in the East, and I woke up at midnight 1 minute after the news dropped on Gerrit Cole. I feel like that might qualify for Spidey senses. Did you have the same thing happen with you?
So I was actually out late last night, Buster, until like 11:15 or so, and I went to bed. And so normally I was in the window awake where I could have actually been awake where something happened, but alas, it happened at midnight, and I didn't find out until all my Yankees friends texted me this morning.
All right, before the deal went down with Gerrit Cole and the Yankees, Brian Cashman, the Yankee general manager, talked about Gerrit Cole.
You know, he's an exciting, dynamic, you know, leader of a staff, and so he's going to secure a great contract no matter where it happens to be. And clearly we're considered, in my mind, that we're part of the heavy-hitting, you know, teams that are contending for his services. So we'll see. You know, he's very impressed with the person. We already know about the player because we've unfortunately seen it from afar and up against us with other clubs. So we'll see if he's interested in joining us, but he's going to have a lot of choices.
I heard from sources that the Yankees got word at about 10:30 Eastern time last night that Gerrit Cole was going to wind up signing with them. As Jeff Passan's reported, 9 years, $324 million with an opt-out after the fifth year and a full no-trade clause. To put that number into perspective, obviously the biggest number ever for a starting pitcher, but in the fall of 2008, they signed CeCe Sabathia at that time to what was then a record $161 million deal. So basically, Gerrit Cole got double of what CeCe Sabathia got. And Tim Kirchen was on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt talking about Cole's deal.
And granted, they gave him an enormous amount of money, but they went a decade without going to the World Series. They hadn't done that since the 19-teens. They had to do something, even if it meant giving him this much money.
Here's Jeff Passan on Baseball Tonight.
This is, by all senses of the imagination, a blockbuster deal, and the New York Yankees get their man. 9 years, $324 million for Gerrit Cole, an average of $36 million a year. The Yankees said that they were going to be aggressive, and that proved to be absolutely true.
Our friend Freddie Coleman, the host of Freddie and Fitzsimmons, was talking about the signing.
If you're willing to pay a guy, if he makes 36 starts, you're willing to pay a guy $1 million per start?
Per start.
If you're willing to do that and you believe he's worth it and he could be the difference between you beating Houston and not beating Houston, in this day and age, yes, I'm paying that guy that money, period. I know people are going to say, well, what about the next 5 or 6 years? If you're the Yankees more than ever before, in professional sports, it's a second-to-second league. Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL. If you believe you can go get it and you get a championship or two or three, whatever happens in year 4, 5, and 6, you don't give a you-know-what.
From Yankees Nation, a lot of excited tweets from Gleyber Torres, from Aaron Judge. Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, tweeted out, "What's happening? Yanks get their man." He used all caps at that point. "And now have what it takes. We get to the World Series next year, 2020, exclamation point. See you soon, Gerrit. Nice job, Hal and Hank. Brian the Cash Man." So Reggie Jackson, very excited. Other moves yesterday, the Phillies signed Didi Gregorius to a one-year, $14 million deal. Chicago White Sox acquired right fielder Nomar Mazara from the Texas Rangers in a deal for a minor leaguer. The former Oriole and Arizona Diamondback Adam Jones has agreed to a two-year deal with a team in Japan. The Giants signed pitcher Kevin Gausman to a one-year deal for $9 million. It's a make-good deal. So if Gausman has a turnaround season next year, he'd be worth something in trade. And I'm sure that that's what the Giants are thinking about him and maybe about Zach Cozart, who they acquired in a deal with the Angels of Anaheim. Let's get to it.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
And Ravi, I can remember when the Ravi train was at the winter meetings last year and it felt like nothing was happening. This year, so different. We'd give you guys a lot to talk about on Baseball Tonight.
Yeah, this year we're on the Acela train. Last year we were on a train that wouldn't move. You know, we were using, pardon the pun, coal, and it just wouldn't function. Now we have Gerrit Cole channeling the Acela train. This is a lot more interesting, and it dampens the about how the system is so broken that nobody is going to get paid. Whether that changes and only the top-end guys get paid remains to be seen, but this has been far more interesting. And when you control the market like Scott Boras did, you can make the statement that we're going to go from a slow burn to a fast and furious. And in his case, $633 million worth of contracts is pretty fast and it's pretty furious.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And for the Yankees now, they addressed their one major need. They got the best pitcher on the planet fronting a rotation that has Luis Severino and Masahiro Tanaka and James Paxton and other guys. They have an excellent bullpen with Aroldis Chapman at the back end, and their offense, in spite of a lot of injuries with their position players last year, led the major leagues in runs, which is why I was thinking last night, Carl, they may be the biggest prohibitive favorites that baseball has seen since those late 90s Yankees. You buying?
I'm buying that. You know, I did kind of go around this morning thinking, okay, who can compete with them? And I said, you know, maybe, again, to me, what we learned about the Nationals last year is that if you have those starting pitchers that can quiet an offense and you can compete with the other team's starting pitchers, you have a chance. So, to me, that may be Cleveland. If Corey Kluber comes back, they can fight them. They can compete with them. They're not as talented as they are, but we've seen what really great pitching can do. You know, again, I feel for the A's and the Rays, but Tampa's got a really good rotation. Oakland has a good rotation. It's not fronted by Gerrit Cole, but there's some Cy Young potential there. But it certainly reduces the field, and it does elevate them to a prohibitive favorite. And I had, you know, some conversations with other executives on other teams, and their comment was, they better win it all. And it wasn't as if they were angry. It's hard to imagine that they don't win it all, you know?
Oh, boy, they're going to go into next season with a lot of pressure, no doubt about it. And I do feel like that in some ways the Yankees are such prohibitive favorites that it almost takes pressure off the Red Sox to make the decisions that they feel like they should make to rebuild and restructure. So we get to next July and the Yankees have this monster that's going to win 105 to 110 games.
Sure.
And the Red Sox are 8 to 10 games behind them. Yeah, yeah, I think fans would get it. You're not going to catch that team.
I don't think there's any doubt, and I think there's probably some effort to do it before the season starts. When you read and understand the collective bargaining tax that teams pay, and if you can get below a threshold, the financial advantages are enormous. And if this move serves as a doorbell to the Red Sox that you cannot compete with them, you're not going to beat them. Absolutely makes sense to do that now. That's why I feel a little worse for the Rays, who are as competitive as they've ever been. And the distance between, at least it feels, and again, it's baseball, you know, it's that's the beautiful part of baseball. You only play the Yankees 19 times. If you're that good, you can destroy the other competition. And if the Red Sox take a step back, then the Rays will have a bigger advantage in their series against Boston. But I think the chasm between the Yankees and the Rays and the A's are the teams, and the Indians are the teams that I look at, not the Red Sox. I don't look at the Red Sox prior to the Cole deal. Given the language the Red Sox were using as the chief competition for the Yankees in the American League, and I certainly feel even more about that now than I did even yesterday, that they're not competition for the Yankees, that those other teams are. And boy, it's like driving 55 and you have a car that can go 100 and the other cars can only go 60. That's what just happened.
And you know that there's going to be a lot of conversation about the Yankees' money. I thought about this overnight too, that the Yankees would be paying more to two players, Gerrit Cole and Giancarlo Stanton, and the Baltimore Orioles' entire payroll. You and I will be hearing a lot from Rays fans and from Indians fans and fans of mid-market, small-market teams saying, boy, it's not fair. And my answer would be, yeah, you're right. You can't argue with that. But that's, you know, the horse went out the barn door 120 years ago with baseball's financial system.
Yeah, no, you cannot argue that. you know, and look, depending on the lens you look at this through, Scott Boras was on Baseball Tonight with us, and he made the case, again, like a guy in his position would, that for the most part, when sports, whatever sport it is, you know, Lakers, Celtics in basketball, Patriots for a while here in football, Montreal Canadiens, you know, having the Goliath, having the team that everybody can hate is generally makes the sport more interesting. Now, it sucks for the fans of the teams that aren't rooting for the Goliath, but I do think the difference in that is when the Goliath has the financial advantage that the Yankees do and that the Dodgers do and that the Red Sox and Cubs and Angels, I think that is the factor that doesn't usually come into consideration with those other teams in other sports. And look, I think perhaps that revenue sharing and collective bargaining agreement and threshold tax may be damned for the next 2 years because everyone understands that the financial parameters are going to change dramatically again. They have to. You know, we now reward players who are far younger and should be getting paid much different than they do waiting 6 years for free agency. So there may be an eye at least towards the idea this is all going to change. So let's spend now. And certainly in the case of the white whale, the guy that is the difference maker. Isn't it funny too, Buster, how these things work out? If Patrick Corbin was somehow swayed the way that Gerrit Cole was to join the Yankees,
we
may not be having this conversation about Gerrit Cole. In fact, I would imagine we wouldn't be.
I would agree with you. I think you're right. It probably would have, even for all the Yankees' money, that would have squeezed them out. About Gerrit Cole, it's interesting, but just in talking with the Yankee sources during this process, you know, they sat down and met with him. Brian Cashman was there, and Andy Pettit was there, and Aaron Boone was there. And there was a sense on the Yankee side that, well, of course, at the end of the process, there's going to be a lot of money, a record-setting deal, double what they gave CeCe Sabathia in the fall of 2008. And yet their sense was, for Gerrit Cole, it wasn't about money. It was about putting himself in a place where he would have a chance to win. And I know that sounds funny, right, after he gets his massive contract, but I don't think that it was necessarily just about the money for Gerrit Cole.
No, but I think you said two different things there. It wasn't just about the money, which I agree with. But when you're talking about teams bidding for you at record prices, you're not going to go call the Kansas City Royals and say, I'm going to join you guys, you know, for $3 million a year. So it always is about the money when the money is relatively close, because no one in their right mind can relate to what $324 million is. And it's very easy to understand that if he preferred to live on the West Coast, I'm sure Scott Boras, his wife, anyone else in his family or friends would say, you could buy 30 houses on the West Coast and spend as much time as you want there, except for the regular season. All these things that you dream about, you have the ability to do. And if you want to win championships and you can be convinced by your idol Andy Pettit that putting those pinstripes on is something that Mark Teixeira and CeCe Sabathia recognized as marquee. There's something unique and different about playing at Yankee Stadium and wearing that uniform and traveling the way the Yankees do and just being a Yankee. Well, then, yeah, sure, money may not be the talked-about priority, but it is a priority, and then you have to consider winning a championship. To me, this was a Dodgers and Yankees conversation. With the Astros on the periphery, because I do believe you chase that ring. And all things being equal, you don't want to spend June, July, and August and September on a team that's out of it. The Yankees will, for the most part, always be in it. The Dodgers, given the way that they've done things with Andrew Friedman, will always be in it. And there aren't many other guarantees of teams consistently that are going to be competitive. You know, that was the great Yankee statistic with Jeter. How many meaningless games did he play over his career? You know, three? That's, to me, what you want. And given the money being what it is with these teams, yes, money absolutely is a priority. It is important. But it's easy to put it on the back burner when you know you're going to get the max dollar from any one of the teams that are bidding on you.
Two more quick ones for you. Didi Gregorius signs a one-year deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. Look, I think that everything they've done this winter, signing Zach Wheeler to that huge contract, signing Didi Gregorius to play shortstop, is a signal that there's one more big move to come, maybe making a deal for Chris Bryant at third base. They're going to get a third baseman who has some impact in the lineup. What did you think of that signing?
I love it, and I love it from Didi's perspective. You know, he came back early last year. He fought through Tommy John surgery and a quicker recovery. And this is the Josh Donaldson deal. And I think that ballpark in that city, in that environment, Didi is going to shine. Unfortunately, you lose the memory that Didi Gregorius came in and made the transition from Derek Jeter to Didi Gregorius as seamless as any human being could make it. And here they are, and they get Garrett Cole, and he signs a one-year, $14 million deal. And I'm sure there's part of him that is looking at that franchise and saying, God dang, you know, I would love to have played there with Cole and been the shortstop and been competing for World Series. The Phillies certainly will allow you a chance to be very competitive in the National League. Another move may make them one of the favorites in that league. But isn't it amazing for all he did for that team, and they don't owe him anything, to be on the outside looking back through that rearview mirror, and you were part of that organization for so long and did such a great job replacing Jeter. And now hopefully you're saying to yourself, I can't wait to compete against them in the World Series.
Yeah, and hopefully he has a big year in 2020 on that one-year contract, rebuilds his value, yeah. And gets a long-term deal next fall. And lastly, Astros manager A.J. Hinch met with reporters for the first time yesterday since, of course, all the news broke about the Astros and sign-stealing. Give a listen to A.J. Hinch.
The sign-stealing part of it is all part of the investigation. So my comments on sign-stealing, my comments on investigations, allegations, even the principal people that we've talked about, articles that I know have been written, it all has to wait for another day. And I'm sorry. I want to answer it and not try to redirect you guys all the time, but I simply can't do it.
You do get those. That's not like a detailed question, right?
It's a detailed question, though. It's a detail to me.
It's just what you think.
Yeah. No, and I'm going to keep what I think to myself until I'm ready to comment on it. Yeah.
And that, of course, not surprising that he answered that way, because Major League Baseball is taking in evidence. And at some point, Carl, what I'm hearing is they're going to come down with a big-time hammer. A.J. Hinch could feel the effect of that. What have you heard?
Yeah, I think this is as uncomfortable as A.J. Hinch has ever been for the guy that may be more comfortable being A.J. Hinch than any other person being themselves. This is a very, very, very dark cloud over the Astros. And, yeah, I mean, I'm hearing things that could lead to one-year suspensions, certainly draft picks and fines, but I do think that we're going to see, because you've got to, we were discussing this on the set of Baseball Tonight, relative to cheating, where does this fit in? Is this an individual steroid thing where, you know, ultimately your third strike, you're banned from the game? We know about sign stealing, but electronically, does that elevate it to the most egregious of all? Do you vacate World Series titles? I think the penalties are going to be much harsher than anyone has imagined them being. Half season, I think if it goes to Beltran and Cora, they could also be suspended for a lengthy period of time, even though they're with new teams. I think that these penalties are going to be harsher than most people would imagine, because I don't think we've ever seen this before. And the way that baseball has punished people, you know, especially during the cheating era of steroids, it wasn't as harsh as many people now wished that it was. I think this is a time where we'll look at it and it will be as harsh or harsher than anyone thought it would be.
All right, before you go, what time are the shows today?
We're on from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, ESPN2, then again at midnight Eastern Time. And you know, let's hope that the coal in the train, again, pardon the pun, is going to continue to work one more day.
I think it will. All right, Carl, thanks.
You got it. Thank you.
Joel Sherman covers baseball for the New York Post. He's out in San Diego at the winter meetings. And, Joel, I've always thought that the criticism of Hal Steinbrenner that he wasn't his father was overstated, that the Yankees have spent a lot of money in Hal's time as owner. But this certainly seemed like the signing of Garrett Cole, like a George Steinbrenner type of move. From what I understand, a couple days ago was Hal Steinbrenner who basically was the one who pushed the Yankees' offer from 8 years to 9 years and essentially put it over the top. What have you heard?
Yeah, you know, Buster, you've been around the team a long time, as I have it. You know what the narrative is going to become. He was cheap until about a certain time last night, and now it's the Yankees buy championships. You know, you're just not going to please a lot of people if you're the Yankees. I do think the key end game here to differentiate the offers at the end from the Angels and the Dodgers was the Yankees moving from 8 to 9 years and the Yankees removing all the deferral possibilities from their offer. And once they did that, I think all things being equal, Cole wanted to try the Yankee thing. I know the allure of staying in Southern California, it's where he was born and raised, and he still lives in Newport Beach, were very strong for him. But Cole, I do think, is – let's not fool around. He went there for $324 million. But I think once the money is on the table, the idea of pretty certainly chasing championships every year of a contract, which he could get with the Yankees and he could not be sure of with the Angels, was really attractive to him. And this is where the supplementary stuff beyond the money gets important, because I do think he grew up a Yankee fan. He grew up a big fan of Andy Pettit. And Andy Pettit was part of the Yankee contingent that met him. And from what I understand, he asked Pettit a ton of questions. And Pettit drilled home this idea of just how great it is to every year know you're going to pitch in October and gain the comfort of playing and pitching in that month.
Yeah, it feels like that over the last decade or so that there have been a handful of players that Hal Steinbrenner makes up his mind he wants. C.C. Sabathia was certainly an example of that when he was a free agent. I think Mark Teixeira was an example of that. You know, we saw Aroldis Chapman when he became a free agent after winning the championship with the Cubs. I think Hal was a driving force behind that one when the front office necessarily wasn't totally interested in the idea of paying a closer that kind of money. But in this case, it was the Yankees saying, you know what? We know it's more than $100 million more than what the starting pitcher record was 2 days ago. But this guy is the guy we want and the guy we know can be a difference maker. You and I have known Brian Cashman a long time. He likes to take his one vacation in January. There have been a lot of situations where it's either been shortened or he had to postpone it entirely because the Yankee business overcomes it. I can't remember a Yankee team where it's done. Like, I mean, he's got to add a backup catcher. He's got to identify a shortstop. You know, they'll re-sign Brett Gardner at some point. They'll probably look for some bargains. But this team is pretty much ready to go for 2020. Is that your read on it?
It's my read with everything you said, with perhaps one caveat. I think they'll stare into this a little bit longer and think about bringing Dellin Betances back, because I think they like the player so much. I wonder what they think of the physical capacity of a 6'8" guy coming back from an Achilles injury. It wasn't a complete tear like Zach Britton, but they saw the first half season that they had Zach Britton, that there is impact on pitching from this injury. But I do think they like the person and potential for dominance so much that they'll think about it. I think Gleyber Torres can handle 120, 130 games at shortstop. And then the question becomes, do they just live with guys like Thairo Estrada and Tyler Wade as inexpensive backup middle infielders? Or do they go into this kind of vast pool that got really much bigger with all the players who were not tendered, of like middle infielders, especially second basemen? And they try to do that, especially if there's a lefty bat in there or something. But, I mean, to your point, Buster, and I'll go back to what I said earlier. The Yankees were going to win the AL East at about 8 p.m. last night. They're now definitely going to win the AL East unless they have a plague of injuries and non-performance. So they could be real judicious about what else they do with this roster.
And your answer leads perfectly into my last two quick questions for you. One, we know the Red Sox fan this morning, because I've heard from some back in New England, they're really upset that Gerrit Cole is going to be a Yankee. I think if you gave truth serum to the Red Sox front office, they would acknowledge, you know what, this makes it easier for us to do the restructuring that we're going to be doing here over the next year. What do you think that? How do you think this might affect the Red Sox?
I think they were doing it anyway, and I think you're right. It just made what was going to be a difficult sales job a little more difficult. I still, in my gut, think that they end up doing everything they can to trade as much of the contracts of David Price and Nathan Eovaldi as possible and move Jackie Bradley as well, and that Mookie Betts is a July trade because there is likely to get something similar to him in July as they are right now, unless some team that maybe missed out on Cole suddenly feels like, you know what, we got to make a big splash. Let's include X prospect to get it done. I know we only have Mookie Betts for a year, but it is Mookie Betts. But we also know that they brought in Chaim Bloom. That was not some guesswork thing. They brought in a guy who's worked in an organization that does more with less, the Tampa Bay Rays, because they, and that makes tough decisions all the time, because they recognized in the next few years they're going to probably have to learn how to do more with less and certainly make some very, very painful decisions. And so I think those decisions were coming anyway. But to your point, I think it's now a little bit easier of a sell in their market to say, look at that team, look at this roster. Should we really, like, just chase, you know, run into the wind and hope that we could win this race?
60 seconds left. What I'm hearing from teams is they feel like that the Cubs are building momentum to eventually at some point trade Chris Bryant and or Wilson Contreras. What have you heard about the Cubs?
Yeah, I think both guys are in play, Buster. I would not be surprised if neither was on the team next year. I think the key issue in the short term here is that Anthony Rendon and Josh Donaldson need to come off the board. Once they do, Bryant is kind of like the next obvious, not only third baseman, but best bat, because then the best bat in the free agent market is probably Marcell Ozuna. And I think we would probably think there's a decent gap between Marcell Ozuna and Chris Bryant as a, you know, maybe as a total player. So he becomes a lot more attractive. So I think the Cubs are just in a little bit of fact-finding four corners here until some of the free agent bats move off the market and they're sitting there with one or two of the more attractive options that teams can still get. Because one thing we're learning in this offseason, Buster, after a couple of dead off seasons, is there's a lot more teams that are trying to win baseball games in 2020, and so they're going to continue to be aggressive this offseason.
Thank goodness for that. Boy, I hope with the next labor agreement we can get past the tanking. Joel, thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
All right, Buster. Thanks for having me on.
Steve Gelbs is part of the Mets broadcast on SNY. You see him on the sidelines all the time, and he's out in San Diego right now covering the winter meetings for SNY. And, Steve, let's get right to the big Mets news. I think the elephant in the room now has a name, and that would be Steve Cohen, with news coming out last week that the Wilpon family is negotiating a sale of the Mets to Steve. And I think the question everyone is asking is, how quickly will his money manifest in what the Mets do? What have you heard about that?
Yeah, Buster, you know, that's a question I frankly can't answer right now. All I know and all we know is what the Mets, what Fred and Jeff Wilpon have released, that Steve Cohen will be increasing his investment and that both Fred and Jeff will stay on in their roles for the next 5 years. The question has obviously been asked, as you said, it's the elephant in the room. It's been asked to Brody Van Wagenen multiple times out here. And again, all I can tell you is that right now in this particular off-season winter meetings, Brody has stated clearly that it's business as usual, that from his point of view, nothing has changed. So it's a developing story. We're going to have to wait and see where it ends up. But for right now, Brody and his front office is operating the same way they were operating before the news broke.
Yeah, according to rule, he would not be able to actually impact moves until his ownership was officially approved by other owners. But I can tell you, having covered teams going through sales, that process gets jump-started from time to time. So you're right. We'll have to just wait and see how this plays out. All right, with that aside, what are the Mets doing? What are the priorities out at the winter meetings?
The big priority, and it has to be the big priority for this team, is pitching, both relief pitching and middle to back end starting. The relief pitching for this team last year is the number one reason why they did not get to where they wanted to go. If you look across the board, a lot of things broke right for this team. The starting pitching health
pretty much 1 through 5. These guys were making starts every 5 days. The emergence of countless young players on the position player side, whether it was obviously Pete Alonso in his rookie of the year season, J.D. Davis, came really out of nowhere from what the expectations were, the projections were for him to become a really impressive, potent bat in the middle of that lineup. And Jeff McNeil backed up an incredible second half in 2018 with a fantastic year in 2019. So it was really the relief pitching, Edwin Diaz, Jerry's Familia, that did this team in. If they would have had even an average bullpen at times last season, this team would have won 90-plus games. And so they're going to focus in on relievers. But like I said, because this team 1 through 5 last year in the starting rotation was relatively healthy, and the odds of that happening again are slim to none, really, you need to get starting pitching depth. And so I think they're going to focus in on one, if not more, proven major league starters. You know, we've heard the name Rick Porcello brought up as a guy that they would target. Certainly some of the guys in the front office, Allard Baird, Jared Banner, have a history with him from Boston. So I think that's what you're going to see. The Mets have lost Zach Wheeler, so they need to fill that spot as well. So the focus is going to be on pitching, although they do not seem like they are fully out on potentially acquiring a starting center fielder as well. And Starling Marte is the name that has arisen again as of yesterday.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing there is that, let's face it, that's going to be a competition among teams. You know, and the Mets with their farm system may not be in as good a position to give up prospects to land him for center field. But one way or the other, it feels like Edwin Diaz is going to turn out to be a linchpin for the 2020 Mets. I saw the comments from Carlos Beltran, the new manager, the other day. He seems relatively confident that they'll be able to figure it out.
He does, and you're right, Buster. Edwin Diaz, no matter how many relief pitchers the Mets acquire, Edwin Diaz has to be significantly better for the Mets to be where they want to be at the end of the year. And certainly he can be. I mean, last year was such a strange year given how dominant Edwin Diaz has been. We know how volatile relief pitching can be and generally is, but I don't think anybody saw that coming. The one thing that Carlos Beltran brings to the table here, and that is unique to Carlos Beltran in terms of relating with Edwin Diaz, not only a shared background, they're both from Puerto Rico, but Carlos came over from a small market team to New York, and he didn't struggle the way that Edwin Diaz did in his first season as a player with the Mets, but he was not where he ultimately wanted to be and where he ultimately ended up being for the Mets in the years that followed. And Beltran understands that perspective and says that, you know, there are a lot of things that he didn't fully understand about New York that he had to make adjustments to in that second full season. So, you know, the day that he got announced, he told me specifically that he views Edwin Diaz as a personal project, that he's going to take it personally if Edwin Diaz does not have success. So, you know, he's all in on trying to fix him. They've sent people down to Puerto Rico to make sure that Edwin Diaz from jump this offseason has gotten, you know, the routine that they want him to get into. And so, you know, last year we saw at times there were some mechanical things Diaz was working on. The slider wasn't where it had been in the past at moments, but, you know, that fastball was still electric and that slider was still there at times. So, you know, I think the stuff is still there. I would be surprised if Diaz didn't bounce back in some way from, again, the just, you know, horrific season that he had a year ago. But is Diaz going to be what he was in Seattle? I think that's yet to be determined.
Yeah, I'm not around the team on a daily basis the way that you are. I'm watching it from afar. And as I watched them pitch it, you know, it sort of popped up in my head. What you just referenced, the question, can he handle New York? Because it certainly through my ears have seen a lot of players who didn't like it. Sonny Gray being the most recent example on the Yankees side. So, you'd see, you know, for one or two batters, he had electric stuff. And then for whatever reason, it would just disappear and they would give up the big hits. What have you heard about Carlos Beltran's situation vis-a-vis this investigation the Major League Baseball is doing about the Astros sign-stealing thing, because I got to believe that at some point for Major League Baseball, if they make a move to discipline Carlos Beltran, they're effectively going to be taking on the whole union, because at the time when, you know, he was may have allegedly been involved in that stuff that was going on, he was a player for the Astros, which feels like a separator from, say, an A.J. Hinch or an Alex Cora.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, I agree with you. And I haven't heard anything specific. I don't think anybody really knows how this situation is going to end up and, you know, what type of bow is going to be put on it eventually. We had Carlos Beltran on set last night. We asked him the question. We asked him if he was concerned at all about potentially being disciplined, being suspended. We asked Hensley Mullins when we spoke with him, who's the new bench coach. We spoke with him the other day about had he considered, you know, potentially being the manager on opening day. And both guys, you know, said that it's not something they've given any thought to. You know, Beltran was given the answer that everybody is pretty much given, and that's really the only answer you can give, which is I'm going to let the process develop and play out, and then we'll deal with it from there. But I agree with you, Buster. It's a tricky situation to you know, specifically punish Beltran, you know, for what happened as a player right now as a manager. I don't know how it's going to play out in the end, and it really doesn't seem like the Mets are too concerned about it, but they haven't, you know, expanded too much on the possibilities there either.
All right, sir. Well, thanks for doing this.
Thank you, as always, Buster.
Carly Rivera covers baseball for ESPN. She spent a lot of the 2019 season with the Yankees. And, Marley, thanks for joining us. You had an interesting dinner experience, I know, last night as the Gerrit Cole news broke. Tell that story.
Well, I was sitting with, first of all, thank you for having me, Buster. I was sitting with some fellow scribes from, you know, the San Francisco Chronicle and New York Newsday and the New York Post. We were all sitting at dinner at a restaurant right next, called Seasons 52, right next to the hotel where the winter meetings are held, the Hyatt in San Diego. And as we're walking in, we ran into quite a group of Yankees brass, among them Steve Swindle, as we well know, the nephew of Hal Steinbrenner. And Hal wasn't there, but Brian Cashman was there, and assistant GM Michael Fishman, and special assistant Jim Henry, the former GM of the Chicago Cubs. And we just all see them, and they greet us just perfectly normally. This is about an hour before the cold news broke. We sit down, and just Brian Cashman goes over to greet us, because obviously there were a few beat writers at this table, and he smiles, and I say, Brian, could we please enjoy our dinner without any breaking news? And he did not lie, and he smiled and said, enjoy your dinner. And about about 30 minutes later, exactly, the cold news broke, and I have to say, and I was commenting this with a few colleagues, that's the way you do it, Buster. They knew they had it. They were just sitting down celebrating, and there wasn't even an iota of a giveaway that anything large had been accomplished. This is a not a super high-end restaurant, a very nice restaurant, but not super high-end. You expected the Yankees to be popping Cristal, and they were not. They were having a nice little family dinner of Yankees brass really close to some writers, and we had no idea that $324 million were about to go down.
So was it a case where you're sitting at the table and this Yankees group and it is at another part of the restaurant and then the news breaks? Are you guys all watching Brian Cashman and walking over to him and asking him, or what happened after that?
At this moment, I had to leave to go to the ESPN set, right? Because obviously we're all getting called for everything that we have to do. And at that moment, when everything happened shortly after, some of my colleagues that were there told me that Joe Maddon walked over to Brian Cashman and congratulated him. And then at that point, it was the way that a lot of the journalists were able to confirm that this was true. I mean, the report is out there. You haven't even had a chance to reach out to your sources. And also shortly afterwards, and the joke was, he came to enjoy dessert, Aaron Boone joined them. So it's definitely very clear that was the celebratory dinner, and that's exactly what they did. And it's just amazing how they played it so cool. I mean, Buster, the evil empire is back, and they did it in such a cool manner. It was cool and calculated, and they did it right in front of us without us noticing.
Hal Steinbrenner driving the boat on this one, him adding a ninth year to the offer I think it was a couple days ago, which probably put it over the top. I mentioned to Carl Ravitch earlier in the show, I really feel like that this makes the Yankees the greatest prohibitive favorite that I've seen in baseball since the late 90s Yankees, because this team is going to be absolutely stacked. What do you think?
100%, and it's one of those things that if you looked at weaknesses for the Yankees, and even though Brian Cashman, and as you know, Buster, you heard that line from manager Aaron Boone constantly that they were not a player away, but a play away from winning. We know exactly what player they were away from winning. And we saw it happen in the playoffs. We saw how dominating Gerrit Cole is. And if we look at a projection of what the lineup can be for the New York Yankees and their starting rotation, at least from 1 to 4, it really is just a force to be reckoned with. It's impressive what they can do. And it's just, they're a complete powerhouse. And you think about it and you're like, how do they not conquer this AL East? I mean, they improved upon a 103 team, you know, a team that won 103 games. So it's just impressive. I completely agree with you.
I joked with Joel Sherman that we know Brian Cashman likes to take his vacation in January. A lot of times that's been interrupted by Yankee news. This January, he can load up on the sunscreen. He can rest easy. He'll be hanging out in the sand for a week, because it feels like all the stuff that he has to do now are little bits and pieces of things. Joel mentioned Dellin Betances.
Yes.
Maybe you go and get a shortstop, you know, a backup catcher. maybe you flip Clint Frazier for value now for some pitching depth. But all the major stuff is done with this team.
Absolutely. We were actually having a joke yesterday that we imagine in our own heads Brian Cashman just licking his fingers and then just kind of doing this thing going, I'm good. I'm done. The rest of you go to work now. He's obviously put the Yankees last year. He put them in this position where they were, you know, obviously a very, very strong contending team and got run over by a great team in the Houston Astros. And now we see that one of the key pieces to the Astros, right, goes over to the Yankees. And you're right, it's going to be very relaxing. Brian Cashman has two lovely children, Teddy and Grace. And I think Teddy and Grace have a really nice vacation coming, and they're going to relax in January.
Oh, man, you're not kidding about that. All right, Marley, I appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Okay, Buster, some Bleacher Tweets, presumably. Lots of commentary on Twitter about this signing. So our first tweet comes from CrossFit School of Sweat, at School of Sweat. If the Angels were willing to get close to $300 million on Cole, shouldn't they redirect and go after both Madison Bumgarner and Ryu now?
Yeah, I think School of Sweat, I think they're going to wind up with Ryu. And my guess is that Madison Bumgarner has a chance to wind up with the Los Angeles Dodgers. What I heard is that the Dodgers actually were second in the bidding for Gerrit Cole. And I think it was Ken Rosenthal reported last night that after the Dodgers found out they missed out on Cole, they immediately pivoted to Bumgarner. So we'll see where that goes.
I am so grateful that the Angels did not get Gerrit Cole. Next one here from Kenny at Kenny City. Especially now with Adam Jones, it seems like there's an uptick in major league players bypassing the MLB and going to Asia to play. Any idea why?
I don't know about an uptick, but yeah, when Adam Jones goes there, it gets your attention. I think it's, you know, at least potentially about money. We've seen how veteran free agents in their 30s in recent years haven't done as well in terms of dollars they get. But according to the reports, Adam Jones is going to get $8 million over 2 years. He may not have gotten that in free agency here in Major League Baseball.
Here's Brendan Savero at MWC Bear. Hey, Buster, is there a chance that the Orioles do anything at the winter meetings?
Yeah, they could do something. Look, they've sent word out from what I've heard from agents that they're basically open for tryouts. they're just going to, I'm sure they're going to try to bring in some cheap veterans, give them some playing time, and hope that they can flip them for value during the 2020 season. My God, think about this, Troy. Last year, the Yankees took 18 of 19 from Baltimore. The Orioles might actually get worse. I mean, we saw they've already traded away a couple of their veterans. They may do some of that more. And the Yankees have added Gerrit Cole. I mean, those games could be cover your eyes bad.
Oh, my gosh. That's going to be insane. And just this thing about just all this money. You know, there's this narrative that kids don't play baseball anymore. And I'm just here to say, like, parents, advise your kids to play baseball. Look at the money these guys are making. This is so much more than your quarterbacks are making, than every other athletes are making. Push your kids to play baseball. Ryan Norton, at Rocket Paul, following up on a conversation we had with Hembo yesterday. How about these names for some outside-the-box Hall of Famers and their chances for enshrinement? We talked about Scott Boras, but how about Bill James, Dr.
Check.
James Andrews, Dave Duncan, and
Second.
Leo Mazzone?
100%. Leo Mazzone, absolutely. Dave Duncan and Leo Mazzone, two of the great pitching coaches of all time. I wrote a column about 10 years ago saying that they should, like, do a separate presentation for coaches. Absolutely. These are people who have had, again, like Marvin Miller, have had a huge impact on the sport. Bill James, the way teams are front offices run now, that all, he's at the root of that. James Andrews, the great work he's done. So I would agree with all that.
Thank you for the tweets this morning. Keep them coming every day. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets.
One last thing.
We got great news on Tuesday that late Boston Globe writer Nick Cafardo won the J.G. Taylor Spink Award. That's given every year to a writer. And, of course, Nick Cafardo passed away last spring during spring training. He'll be honored posthumously in July during the Hall of Fame weekend in Cooperstown, New York. And his son, Ben, is a great and cherished colleague of ours here at ESPN. And, you know, so happy for Ben and his family. I knew Nick. What a great guy. And it's so cool that he's getting this honor coming up. That's it for today. My thanks to Marley, to Joel, to Carl, to Gelbsy, and to Troy. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. So, Troy, I'm thinking that if there's big news, then maybe we'll have another podcast on Thursday or Friday. We'll just have to wait and see on that. If not, then I'm thinking like December 23rd, 2 days before Christmas. That work for you potentially?
That works for me. So just a heads up, Buster, I'm not going to be here Thursday and Friday, so I'm going to have to find you a little substitute. I'm going to be out in Vegas, Buster.
Okay. Well, what are you doing out in Vegas?
I am going to UFC 245. Mm-hmm. We're doing a little live podcast, a radio show with Ariel Helwani. It'll be a lot of fun. I've never been to Vegas before. It's not really my thing, but we'll see.
Oh, my God. But you're like the worst person in the world for Vegas because you get regular sleep. Like, just when Vegas is starting to light up is when you're going to be turning off your light in your hotel room at 8 o'clock saying, sorry, I have to get my beauty sleep.
Exactly. And I'm like so anti-Vegas. I don't like gambling. I don't like all of the hoopla that comes with it. So we'll see. I'll have an open mind, though.
Again, if there's big news, then we'll generate another podcast here potentially on Thursday or Friday. But if there's not, then we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.